This is State of the Union, the DC 37 radio show on 91.5 WNYE FM. I'm Chris Policano. DC 37 is New York City's largest public employee union with 125,000 members and nearly 50,000 retirees. We're part of the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, also known as AFSCME. We're on the air Sundays at 8 p.m. We rebroadcast Wednesdays at 1:30 p.m. We're also available on podcast. Simply go to the podcast app on your smartphone and search for DC 37 State of the Union. There are now more ways to stay in touch with us. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Check out the website, www.dc37.net. Call our hotline, 212-815-7555. And every month, keep a lookout for the union newspaper, the Public Employee Press, in your mailbox. If you have any comments about this show, please drop us a line at State of the Union. That's one word, State of the Union at dc37.net. Your feedback is always welcome. This evening, we are joined by the recently retired DC 37 Health and Security Plan Associate Administrator. That's a long title. Audrey Brown and Seth Kennedy, who is the Associate Counsel of the DC 37 Health and Security Plan. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having us.
Glad to be here.
We're going to talk tonight about prescription drugs, and we do this because it's very important that our members know what's going on with prescription drugs. It's very important that everybody knows what's going on with prescription drugs because they are taken now so widely, and they're so damn expensive, and the rent is too damn high, as they say. And I know that the plan has been working diligently to try to contain those costs, and that is a full-time job. That's a number of full-time jobs. Let's talk a little bit about what the current situation is.
Okay. A little bit of history first.
Okay.
Back in the 80s, our dental benefit was actually more expensive than our prescription drug benefit. Remember, although there are only 125,000 members, we actually cover over 313,000 participants in our
family
benefit,
members,
et cetera, and children. So our prescription drug plan now causes us to spend over 75% of our entire budget for all benefits on prescription drugs. And I think, as Seth can attest, that spike and that increase in cost is attributable to direct advertising. Isn't that true, Seth?
Yeah, absolutely. The United States is the only major Western industrialized country that allows direct-to-consumer advertising of pharmaceuticals. I believe New Zealand may be the only other developed country, but obviously there's a huge difference between the population of New Zealand and the magnitude of the industry here in the United States. And all of the studies have, across the board, shown that that is the leading cost driver in drug prices, whether it's in the sheer amount of money that these drug companies are spending to put these advertisements on the air in, real primo advertising slots, or in the impact it has on individuals coming to their doctors and saying, oh, the commercial on TV said I should ask you about this really expensive brand drug, and no matter what the doctor says, because the patient has seen this commercial and knows that the commercial says this drug is going to do what I want it to do, they insist and they get that drug from the doctor, and that drives demand towards these drugs that have the money and the budgets and the access.
When you think about how perverse that is, how somebody came up with the idea of let's go past the doctor, let's go past the MD degree, let's go past the expertise, and let's go right to Chris Policano and sell him on a drug that may or may not be in my best interest, even asking for the drug after I've heard all the side effects read to me, on the air. They tell you all the side effects of these drugs, and people are still asking for them and insisting upon them, and that's costing everybody too much money. It is a perverse way of doing medicine.
And then the next ad will be for a drug that will help you treat those side effects but will come with its own side effects. Then you need another drug.
And this is almost funny, but it's really serious business we're talking about here. And we're talking about people's – and we're talking about expenditures of like $1 billion.
Easily. Listen. The United States, of all the industrialized nations, if you measure us against the 11 biggest industrialized nations, we spend more than any other industrialized nation on healthcare and rank last among that group. So we're getting no value for our money that we're spending, and frankly we're subsidizing the rest of the world. And unlike the rest of the world, we have no price controls on our drugs, because we have a Congress, if I can be blunt, that is bought and paid for.
I couldn't stop you from being blunt if I tried. Okay.
Anyway, it's clear that the pharmaceutical lobbyists are spending more money in Washington than any other lobby group. I think more than the NRA at this point. Isn't that true?
Yes, absolutely. Since 2007, the pharma industry has spent $2 billion on lobbying efforts in Washington, D.C. To break that down, that is $450,000 per member of Congress per year for the last 11 years. They have 1,100 full-time lobbyists in D.C. That is over two per congressperson. The pharma industry's lobbying efforts on the Affordable Care Act are the single largest expenditure by any one industry in response to any one piece of legislation ever.
Let's talk about that a little, because I was just thinking that the Affordable Care Act did not make drugs affordable at all. And that is one of the and you just attributed it to how much money was spent by Big Pharma to keep the status quo as major changes were taking place in the healthcare world.
Well, let me give you a little example of how that played against us, because we were invited to help write a part of the Affordable Care Act as it pertained to prescription drugs. And we worked with a coalition of consumer groups and other unions, including our international. And we had a wonderful senator from the state of Washington who worked with us in proposing language to basically make the industry transparent, more accountable. Language got put in. It went into committee. Never came out of committee. And in fact, when I asked what happened in committee, I was told pharma was invited to the table. We were not. In addition, I think there have been about a half a dozen, maybe a dozen now, since Trump was elected, proposals that have been sponsored to help rein in this out-of-control industry. But those proposals, too, those very well-drafted proposals, have never made it out of committee. So it's just an example of how effective this lobbying group is.
And the result has been that, as you say, once upon a time, the bulk of our expenditures on benefits went to dental care. And now, in the past X number of years, that has changed, like flip-flopped, so it's the other way around?
Yes, and it's worse than that. If you look back 8 years and you look at how much drug prices have gone up, part of it, as Seth mentioned, is attributable to direct advertising to consumers and then all the lobbying efforts. Drugs have gone up over 108% in the last year. The contributions we receive from the city to help fund our benefits have gone up 1.05%. You do the math.
Right.
So we struggle very hard to keep our benefits affordable for our members, many of whom are low-wage workers. They need their benefits. We respect that. We honor that. But honestly, there's only so much we can do to control this industry, because the solution is in Washington. But we're going to continue fighting for every penny we can save while continuing to provide really good benefits to our members. But the deck is stacked.
What have we done? Let's take a step back and talk about what we've accomplished in terms of dealing with Big Pharma. As formidable as the challenges ahead of us are, there are things that we have done in the past few years.
Yes. First and foremost, I mean, besides the litigation, let me just address what we do contractually. We write our own contracts for the provision of our prescription drug benefit with our prescription benefit managers. And we make sure that we lock down all the little holes that we know exist so that we're getting full value for the money we're spending, that any rebates that they receive from the pharmaceutical company come directly back to the plan, et cetera. And that's been a very helpful cost containment piece, but it's only one piece. The other two things we do that are really important is we review legislation, although there's not a lot of it, but it happens at both the state and federal level. And because the federal government has largely abdicated its responsibility in this area, we see more and more state legislation being sponsored. here in New York as well. So we comment on that legislation. We propose legislation. But the third piece that we do, and we've done for quite some time now, is we bring class action lawsuits against the pharmaceutical industry. It's kind of like putting your finger in the dike, but we can't ignore the illegal activities of some of the manufacturers and distributors in this industry. So where we find a belief or evidence that they've engaged in unlawful practices, we will sue. And we've been successful in a number of cases over the years. I think, Chris, you'll remember the average wholesale price litigation we did, where we caught brand manufacturers artificially inflating the cost of brand drugs. Every time a new one was added, they would bump up the cost of the old ones by 5%. Now, if you were managing a plan, you might just be paying attention to the new drug that got added to the list. But really, if you took a step back and you saw that really that was not the only price that was being bumped up, they were bringing along a lot of the older drugs. So it was called AWP, Average Wholesale Price Litigation. We sued the entity, it's called McKesson, that was responsible for publishing the prices and engaged in a conspiracy to inflate the price of brand drugs. We were successful in a settlement in getting a rollback of many, many, many brand drug prices for a number of years to repay all the benefit plans, not just ours, for the extra money they've been spending. Now, more recently, we've caught the generic manufacturers engaging in similar behavior.
And that was always that was always part of the solution, was use
Absolutely.
Generic drugs. Now the generic drug makers are...
are part of the gang of many.
Gang of many.
that are at the trough trying to get their share of the money. And what was particularly troubling about it is they started looking at some of the older generic drugs that were very inexpensive. And they said, look, the big guys who are making the brand drugs are making tons of money. Why don't we inflate the cost of these drugs, too? So they got together, we allege, and conspired, many of them, to artificially increase now the price of generic drugs. And, Chris, as you know, our plan is a generic-based plan. So here we are preaching, right, that our folks should be taking generic drugs because they're equally effective as brand drugs where they're available to keep our costs down. So then you have this new insidious practice entering the market. So we sued all of those manufacturers as well.
I've got to take a break. Let's talk about that when we come back, and we will be right back.
Were you a September 11th responder or volunteer? Were you present at the dust cloud on 9/11? Do you live, work, or go to school in the New York City disaster area on 9/11 or in the following months? Do you now suffer from problems such as chronic cough, shortness of breath, anxiety, depression, or have other symptoms? If so, you may be eligible for the World Trade Center Health Program and could receive medical monitoring and treatment at no out-of-pocket cost to you. To learn more about the program and get an application, go to www.cdc.gov/WTC or call 1-888-982-4748. If you were there, you deserve care. Call today. 1-888-982-4748. 1-888-982-4748. If you were there, you deserve care.
We're back. This is State of the Union, the DC 37 radio show on 91.5 WNYE FM. I'm Chris Policano. We are talking with Audrey Brown and Seth Kennedy from the DC 37 Health and Security Plan, which manages the benefits of DC 37 members. And one of those benefits is prescription drugs and helping to manage that in an environment where prescription drug manufacturers are trying to take us to the cleaners and succeeding too often. Is that fair enough?
Unfortunately, that's true.
And we were talking before the break about the lawsuits that we have filed against both the the generic manufacturers who have taken, who sort of say to themselves, hey, I can get some of that, and are trying to do that by raising the prices.
Yes, they are.
And this isn't just, let's just be clear, because there is this one case, and I forget the fellow's name, but he's the most hated person in
America.
Martin
Shkreli.
Martin Shkreli,
right.
The famous, we had a $13 pill and then we sold it for $750 or something like that. And he turned out to be a little weasel of a guy who, you know, seemed to have the empathy of a flea.
That's putting it nicely.
But that was, so he became the poster child of a bad, independent, small prescription drug manufacturer. But we're not talking about these little mom-and-pop shops. We're talking about the industry as a whole is overcharging for their product.
It couldn't be truer, Chris. And it's happening more now than it ever has before. But there's another bigger issue that I think is important to bring our listeners' attention to, and that's the opioid crisis. I think it's important to talk about that because as we have sadly found out, it's costing this country over 50,000 lives a year based on opioid addiction overdoses, whether they start on opioids and move to heroin. Heroin is actually cheaper than opioids, but far more powerful. But this epidemic, or it's probably more a pandemic, wouldn't you say, Seth?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there was a new study that got published today that said that just the economic cost, and that's not even bringing in the human cost of addiction and death and loss and pain that's come out of it, but just the economic cost of this crisis over the last decade or so is about to hit $1 trillion, and it's only getting worse, and it's getting worse faster every year.
But let's take a step back again, because we've got some time to talk about this. When we talk about the opioid crisis, how did the opioid crisis start? What got America hooked on opioids?
Well, originally, the FDA approved opioids, and there are several different classes of drugs in that category. They all derive from poppy seeds. The original purpose or approved purpose by the FDA was for extreme cancer pain or hospice care. That's what it was supposed to be prescribed for. But more and more over the years, based on the fact that the manufacturers were paying medical experts to write slanted articles, not disclosing the real danger of this drug, saying, you know, it's not really an addictive drug. You might have pseudo-addictions, but it's not a really addictive drug.
But this was for, I'm sorry for interrupting, but this was for the management of pain.
Extreme pain. You go to the dentist now, and if they pull your tooth, I guarantee you, you will get an opioid drug, not an aspirin, not a Tylenol.
And this idea that opioids are designed to manage pain is particularly important, given that over the last 10 or 15 years, it's become very common. If you go to a doctor, there's going to be a sign up on the wall, and there's going to be a bunch of different faces, and it's going to say from 1 to 10, how bad is your pain? The idea that pain is something that needs to be independently treated is very new, and that's the result of, you know, years of investment and effort to advertise pain management drugs, including opioids.
And let's be clear, pain sucks. When we experience pain, it's something that you're trying to avoid, and you're willing to pay a price for that.
Well, and pain sucks, but pain is subjective. There was an interesting study done recently where patients were put in one of two situations. One was they were put on an IV drip that automatically controlled the amount of morphine that they were given. A second group had a nurse come in on the same exact interval and administer the same exact dose of morphine. These are two groups of people getting exactly the same drug at exactly the same time, just by a different method. And the group that was getting the automatic IV drip reported that their pain level stayed constant and didn't change at all. the group that was getting the IV, that was getting the morphine by a nurse coming in and injecting them with a syringe that they could see, that they could feel, reported that their pain decreased. So the conclusion of this study is that sometimes, as long as you know consciously that you're doing something to manage your pain is going to be managed, whereas if you're just having the chemical put into your system without knowing about it, it's not as effective.
So there's a real mind-body connection here, clearly.
Fascinating.
It is fascinating. And they've even done studies with placebos for pain management and found them to be equally effective in many cases because of the whole mind-body connection. But, you know, it's important to know that opioids in this country are now the most commonly prescribed drug of all other drugs. And in 2014, I think it represented over $11 billion in profits for the companies that make these drugs and distribute them. So it's really big business.
But again, you've just taken us through how this problem started.
Yep.
And then it was an underemphasizing of the side effects. Ignoring the side effects. That got us into this trouble where people were getting addicted by the thousands. And this isn't, we're not talking about the 1980s and crack cocaine or heroin dens or the criminality of it. This was being done with a piece of paper called a prescription, and you were giving it to your pharmacist, and they were giving you the medication, and you went home, and you became addicted to these drugs.
That's exactly right. And it doesn't take a long time to become addicted, unfortunately. These are very powerful drugs.
And in terms of how much they were giving out, the idea that you know, I have a doctor who doesn't want me taking too much of anything, and I appreciate that. But that doesn't seem to be, he seems to be more of an exception than the rule. I don't want to cast aspersions, but it seems like, yes, here, take this pill again in 4 hours, and am I right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's a lot of money, as Audrey said, in getting these drugs out there and getting these drugs into patients' hands, and that includes, you know, peer-reviewed journals and things like that that advertise for, you know, the latest in scientific research and developments and studies on things. And a lot of those are very heavily influenced by the companies that make these drugs, and that absolutely influences what doctors do and what gets prescribed and what gets out there.
Let me tell you one example that was on 60 Minutes not so long ago. There was one of these manufacturers whom we're suing was actually paying its reps a bonus if they could convince the doctor to up the dosage of the opioid prescriptions.
And now, and we've got, I want you to know so that you're not surprised by how much time there is left to talk. We've got about 3 or 4 minutes.
Okay.
So Mayor de Blasio announced last month that New York City has filed a lawsuit to hold drug companies accountable for their part in the opioid epidemic. We have applauded that effort. But we want to make it clear that we have been part of that effort prior to the mayor's lawsuit, admirable lawsuit.
Right.
Let's talk about that.
And we applaud the mayor's efforts, but back in December of last year, we filed our own national class action lawsuit against most of the manufacturers and the distributors of opioids. It's in federal district court before the multi-district litigation panel in Ohio. We are one of many plaintiffs in the group. There are lots of folks suing, but we're working with a very reputable law firm that has done national class actions for many, many years. They've sued the tobacco industry. They recently sued VW for their scandal in falsifying their mileage and emission controls. But we're doing this because, first of all, we want to stop people from dying. But secondly, the plan has expended a lot of money in covering these drugs, in paying disability claims for people who've become addicted, rehab claims, death benefits. These are all damages. But the damages, not just to our members and our plan, but it's our entire communities that are being affected. So our members need to know that we fight for them on many different levels, not just in negotiating good contracts, but we think this is such an important issue that cuts to the core of the quality of life in this country that we think it's important for members to know we're out there fighting these wrongdoers, and we hope to put a stop to the deaths and to control this industry so that we're not spending money unnecessarily. People aren't suffering unnecessarily.
And the overdose deaths are staggering.
Unbelievable.
I don't think we ever saw overdose deaths in other drug
Nothing like this.
Issues or other drugs. And that's because, why do we think that there are so many, is there any understanding of why there are so many overdoses? Is it the pills themselves or the medications themselves that are more powerful? Is it people accidentally just using the excess? I'm not talking too clearly. Let me slow it down. Is it the access to the drug that makes it easier to die from the drug? Meaning that if you had to go find heroin and it was illegal and it was clandestine, it may not have been as easy to then die from it as opposed to if it's in my medicine cabinet.
And not only is it easy to access, but if your doctor tells you, I'm writing you a prescription for medicine that's going to make you feel better, you're going to take that prescription, you're going to stop at your pharmacy on the way home from the doctor, you're going to pick up as much of that drug as you can because your doctor, who you trust and who knows how medicine works, told you that it's going to make you feel better. So there's every reason in the world for people to believe what they're told about these drugs. And they are just that powerful, and they are just that addictive, and they are just that expensive. That if you do end up getting addicted, it's a very slippery slope from the clean, quote-unquote, legal drugs that you can buy for a lot of money from the pharmacy to the dirtier, illegal versions of those drugs that you can get for much cheaper on the street. And it's a steady descent and spiral that is so critical to stop as early as possible.
We're talking with Audrey Brown and Seth Kennedy from the DC 37 Health and Security Plan. The problem is opioid drugs. The problem is Big Pharma. Mayor de Blasio has filed a lawsuit to hold drug companies accountable. DC 37 has been part of an effort to hold drug companies accountable. We've been doing that with lawsuits, and we will continue to do that. We've got about 30 seconds left. Anything else that you want to say before we say goodbye?
Just remind the members that the union fights for them on many different fronts. And this is just one example of what we do to try to keep their health care affordable. Employers will never do this for members. Unions do this for members. And we encourage any union out there that's not involved in the litigation to join us. Members, you should know we're out there fighting the good fight for you.
Seth, Audrey, thank you very much. That's just about all the time we have for the show. I do want to remind folks that on February 24th at 11 a.m., we will be gathering by the thousands in Foley Square, and hopefully you will be with us as we take back the country from the rigged rules of engagement that have currently been going on, anti-union, anti-worker, anti-people. Join us on February 24th at 11 a.m. in Foley Square. For more information, call 212-815-1550. The producer is Rudy Orozco. The engineer is Andrea Minocchio. I'm Chris Policano. Until next time, ciao.